It's the Red Tag Sales Event at Jeff Weiler Chevrolet of Columbus. Look for the red tags and unlock unbeatable discounts on new and pre-owned Chevys. 0% APR on select new Chevrolet for well-qualified buyers. From the rugged Silverado to the sleek Malibu, every tag means savings. Financing made easy. We'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. Stop by Jeff Weiler Chevrolet on Gender Road or shop anytime at jeffweilercolumbus.com. That's jeffweilercolumbus.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague and friend, Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State, to comment on headlines that are moving stories in Europe, given that they're half a day ahead of us often. This is Ukraine, and the conflict zone is now a negotiating table and not a battlefield. The headline, Russia signals it could reject modified U.S. peace plan for Ukraine. Subhead, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov suggests Moscow would walk away from a proposal that differs substantially from the Alaska talks. Mary, a very good evening to you. This is State Department territory, and it is a puzzle momentarily that the State Department was not intimately involved in this from the first. What we're told, according to the journal, is that the document that we're presented with, called the 28-point plan, was drawn up after conversations between the president's counselor, Witkoff, and the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, dealing with not a diplomat on the Russian side, but a man named Dmitriev, whose job is the head of the Sovereign Wealth Fund. However, we were given this plan with many moving parts. Right away, it seemed contradictory what was being conceded by the American side and what was being claimed by the Russian side. Within hours, there was a 19-point plan drawn up with Europe participating and Kyiv participating, we're told. That left out some of the major sticking points to be resolved by the leadership in all the countries involved. Here we are now waiting for the next version. However, I'm struck by the ceremony of this. It's State Department's job or the foreign ministry's job to draw up proposals beforehand and arrive not working them out with the back of an envelope in booth somewhere in Europe between a banker and a real estate developer and his partner. It is exceedingly odd from my reading of history. Is it odd from your point of view, having worked in the State Department and observed it these many years? Good evening, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. Well, President Trump is an unorthodox U.S. president. He comes from a business background. He's very transactional. He doesn't necessarily approach these sorts of problems from an ideological point of view. And his past experience as president probably teaches him that approaching things with a business mindset can yield positive results. Look at what happened, for instance, with the Abraham Accords, which essentially came about because the nations of the Gulf and North Africa and elsewhere realized that their prosperity, both now and in the future, was better linked to Israel and not to a terrorist cause. That being said, you're right, of course, that historically the State Department has led these sorts of negotiations, done it in a very methodical way, starting at, the lowest levels of their counterparts and then, working out proposals that make their way up the chain. That's just not how President Trump operates. And I think, too, there's a little bit of a disconnect here between how the president dealt with Israel's war in Gaza against Iranian proxies and how he's dealing with Russia and Ukraine. In the case of Israel, we sided with the aggrieved that happened to be the stronger party, and we weren't really neutral between the two. We said either Hamas, stops its terrorist activities and releases hostages, or we're going to empower Israel to do it for you. That's very different from the approach to Ukraine, which seems to be, yep, let's get the business-minded people together. And we're not going to take a side. We're not going to side with the aggressor or the aggrieved. We're going to stand in the middle as some neutral party. And if anything, we'll put pressure on the aggrieved here, which is Ukraine. Now, there could be reasons for that. The president might say, well, I don't believe that war is winnable, or I don't think I have the political capital to back Ukraine, or I don't think that, you know, our partners in Europe have the political will or means to allow Ukraine to win. Therefore, this is the best possible outcome. I don't know. But, you know, dealing with nations is different than doing business deals, because nations have national interests. They have political interests. They have, goals that might extend beyond the certain transaction. And I think that's where, you know, the president is running into problems. He's dispatched business people who are, you know, transactionally oriented instead of, you know, leaning on the wherewithal of the State Department and Marco Rubio, who are more politically minded and strategically minded. I think, you know, that balance is getting corrected. Marco Rubio is now getting involved, and we'll see how this eventuates. But it's a very different thing to negotiate between nations than to negotiate a property deal.
I read a scattering of headlines from Europe, because the Financial Times is from Europe. I stay with London here. None of these things make any sense by themselves, but they add up to a lot of movement, some of it panicky. U.S. holds secret peace talks with Russia and Ukraine in Abu Dhabi. Europe's top diplomat rejects Russian return to G8. Macron, the president of France, only Kyiv can determine territorial concessions. And Russia bombs Kyiv, killing six. And Romania scrambles jets to intercept incoming Russian drones. Mary, we're talking about a story here that's changing moment to moment, and it is very difficult for me to picture how state is going to handle this. There seem to be several peace plans, one of which always gets the top billing, White House to Kremlin, in other words, Moscow to Washington. What is your measure of the idea of cutting out all the Europeans, cutting out Ukraine, ostensibly? I don't know whether it's a fact. I presume on the headlines. Is that a deal that the State Department can handle, to cut out the people with, well, blood and treasure in the game?
Well, the State Department isn't entirely cut out. Rubio was sent to Geneva over this past weekend to take input from our European partners and from the Ukrainians. Where they were cut out was in the initial deal making. And again, there could be rationalizations for that. Steve Witkoff might think, well, the Europeans haven't been helpful so far, and they don't want us to act as a neutral party. Therefore, they're not going to be of assistance here. Of course, the problem, just to reference what I just said before, is the problem is that by doing so, you are giving an advantage to the aggressor and not the aggrieved by allowing them to shape the initial outlines of the document. And that's a problem, because it's like negotiating for a car. Once you start on a price point, that's the price you negotiate around. You can't just reset the price lower. And so I think that's part of the cause of the European alarm and the Ukrainians' alarm, is that, can you really move very far off of the starting point? But secondly, you're right. The Russians are not just negotiating with the Ukrainians by making war on them and committing war crimes and negotiating privately with the U.S., that they're also trying to intimidate the Europeans by saying, look, we can wreak havoc in your societies too. And of course, that is also the European alarm, which is that they're physically closer to Russia. They're far more endangered than we are. And so, this could be, President Trump deciding to throw a cat amongst the pigeons and to create that alarm and create some sort of energy on the European side. But whether or not that results in productive discussions is another matter.
Gideon Rockman, the distinguished foreign correspondent for the Financial Times, published a column yesterday with three broad possibilities. I want to recount them to you and see if you have a choice or expectation where State Department fits in. The first possibility is that Ukraine rejects the plan, any plan, and President Trump follows through and cuts off aid. The second is that the proposal work between Witkoff and Dmitriev brings in the State Department, Europe and Washington and Kyiv, and they changed the plan substantially. That seems to be in train now with the 19 points or whatever the White House is working on now. The third scenario is the one that I'm suddenly most attracted to, that the many inconsistencies and loose ends in the original plan cannot be solved, and the war continues while everybody's pretending they're working on peace. That sounds more likely, Mary, given the headlines of 6 killed in Kyiv with a deliberate Russian attack while they're negotiating, and the drones into Romania, which is on the frontier. Across the Danube is Ukraine, if in the Black Sea. So we're looking at Russia having lots of tools to turn the heat up, and I don't know what the U.S. position is right now. Is that an advantage? What's your opinion of where we're going, of those three possibilities?
Well, the third, because what you're implying is that the Russians also have agency.
Yes.
And the Russians have their own strategic goals. And Putin's been very clear about what he wants. He wants to erase Ukraine as an independent sovereign nation. He wants to absorb it into greater Russia. He wants to eliminate the Ukrainian language. That's why, as they seize, you know, these thousands of children, they're sending them to re-education camps in Russia to learn Russian and to become Russians. And so, you know, this is all, from my point of view, a smokescreen on Putin's part to buy time, to weaken the bonds between the U.S. and Europe and Ukraine, and to achieve his strategic goals, which is to absorb Ukraine, period. He's never really wavered from that. He's never said anything differently. He's trained as a spy. He spent, you know, his early career in the KGB. This is what they do. And so, again, this is why I say it's different to negotiate a business deal with a counterparty than it is to negotiate with a state that has ideological ends and strategic ends that may differ widely from yours. And it's also why it's very difficult, if not impossible, to be neutral between an aggressor and an aggrieved. Because if you reward the aggressor or you grant them equal status, you're conceding your weakness and you're encouraging more aggression. So I don't doubt that President Trump wants peace. I don't doubt that the negotiating team it has good intentions. I just think that, you know, history and Putin's character suggests that the way they're approaching the situation has a low likelihood of success.
One clear-eyed hawk is named Kaja Kallas, a former prime minister of Estonia, who's now the chief foreign minister for the EU. And Kaja Kallas speaks up right now saying the invitation for Russia to rejoin the G8 is rejected. It's unacceptable. Why? Estonia is said to be on the menu, Mary. There's a new book out in Europe called When Russia Wins or If Russia Wins. And the first thing the Russians do is move into Narva and claim it's a Russian-speaking town. It should not be in NATO, and sit there saying, all right, NATO, over to you. That's a hit back in Europe right now. There are plenty of hawks in the EU. It's not a passive organization. We're going to do what's best for their nation and their collection. It's a puzzle to me, Mary, why Washington continues to negotiate as if the Kremlin's the only one you have to satisfy. It's odd.
Well, there are domestic political considerations. Vice President Vance, for instance, who's very influential in these decisions, has developed a base that is very populist and very skeptical of American interventions abroad, that in particular believes that Ukraine is a very corrupt democracy and wastes U.S. dollars, and therefore it's not in our interest to be involved. Let the Europeans handle it. And in theory, John, that's a coherent point of view. The problem is that in practice, it's not, because that's the reality is that Ukraine is a buffer state and that Putin is not a trustworthy counterparty. And the Europeans do not only lack the will, but they lack the means to prevent Putin's march. And that's why, you know, again, it's funny, you have kind of the extremes here. You have kind of an ideologue in Vance and a transactional person in Trump. And what is ultimately effective is something in between, is a realist that, right, you know, understands that, yes, there are limits to American power, but if we're not involved, we could find ourselves with a far greater problem set in the future if we appease a man like Putin. not least of which because there are others in the world like Xi Jinping that take their cues from Vladimir Putin and his successor failure.
Mary Kissel.
So I think that's the
Former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. I wanted to leave time for us to praise Marco Rubio and his work in Latin America. When we come back, we're going to speak positively. I am, certainly, of the former senator from Florida. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call CARE Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.